Good morning. It's good to see everyone out. Mary Ellen was telling me right before we came in to keep her daughter-in-law, Sandy, still in your prayers. She had a stroke probably about 3 weeks ago, something like that. Still having some real issues with high blood pressure. It was up over 300, that top number, this past week, and has spent some days in the hospital. So keep Sandy in your prayers as well. You know, we finally have made it over a year now with this pandemic, and that's amazing to me. When I first started preaching at Kansas, this is kind of, we're going to go the long way around on this story. When I first started preaching at Kansas, Dad would usually give me an old sermon, and that's what I would use, sometimes verbatim. I would just read those sermons word for word. And then when he talked me into coming here one Sunday morning and every other Sunday night, a lot of times I would still wait until the very last possible minute to get anything done. I've never been much of a planner. And then when Dad passed away, I sort of did things the same way. I just kind of would fly by the seat of my pants. And then I read this article about a guy who sells real estate and how he organizes his work schedule. I didn't think it was for me, but he would know on Monday every lunch meeting that he was going to have for at least that week and possibly the next 2 weeks. He would know on Monday where his sales needed to be at the end of the day, on Wednesday to where he would need to be to meet his goal on Friday. And I thought that has to be a relief for him. And so not too long after that, after I had gotten out of the hospital, I watched a sermon, and I've told this story before, and that preacher there talked about how he tried to map out his whole year. That whole year he knew what he was going to be preaching on in May, what he would be preaching on in September. Not that he had the sermon already prepared, but that he knew what topic he was going to be preaching on. He had a plan, and I liked that. And you all know I enjoy sermon series, and that's mostly because I'm a lot better with a comma than I am a period. It's probably because I grew up watching so much TV and loving TV series. But I've always found a larger topic with some subtopics kind of in there helps me prepare a little bit better. So again, after my heart surgery, while in recovery, there's a whole lot that goes on with that and a lot of weird emotions, still a lot of weird emotions. And one of those things was this. It was preaching. I struggled with the fact that I was so fearful in the hospital. I was disappointed to have looked people in the eye and said to die is gain. But when it came time for me, boy, I did not feel that way. And I decided if I was going to continue doing this, there was going to have to be a plan that was made. And so I kind of adopted that. Now, here's where things went sideways. Really good last year. We did all of John. It was pretty good. Even getting sick, we stayed pretty much, COVID helped, I guess. We missed some weeks there, but we stayed pretty much on point. And so this year started. Missy got COVID, missed a week. I had a couple of dates built in. And then I got sick again. And that put me back too. And I started thinking, now I'm way behind from my schedule, not that you all knew there was that schedule. And so I did one of my Sunday mornings on a Sunday night, and I kept thinking Easter was going to be that following week. But Easter wasn't that following week. And I thought, I planned. I planned using 2020's calendar for 2021, and it doesn't work like that, people. Calendars are specific to the year they are addressing. So we get this week. I had planned we were going to start a series on family and run that through Father's Day, but it turns out Mother's Day is next week. So here we are. Back at all that again, I decided to map out sermons for the whole year. That's why we did John last year. And then we had COVID. And nothing went according to plan. Nothing had worked out necessarily like I planned last year. Plans for all of us that were made maybe months in advance, maybe even years in advance. We found those things postponed or canceled, and one thing after another didn't happen the way we thought it would, chances are all of us here experienced that same thing in one way or another. Not just lunches, but birthdays and anniversaries and dates and weddings and showers and graduations and holidays. So many things that you had plans for weeks or months and maybe years. All of a sudden, we found those postponed or they were canceled altogether. Even now, as we look to the future and we look to tomorrow or next week, or next month, we look down the road, it's still hard to know what comes next. When are things going to go back to normal? When are things going to go back to how they were before? How can we make plans when we don't know what's coming next? So we've taken to using this term a lot. And I know I've said it and I've heard it used a lot of times, that these are uncertain times. We say these are uncertain times. Everything that we had planned has fallen through, and it's either been postponed or it's canceled. And everything we would like to plan, we're not really sure how to make those plans because we don't know what's coming next. And so we keep saying that these are uncertain times. But I kind of want to push back against that phrase this morning, because that term implies that if there are uncertain times, That phrase implies that there is such a thing as certain times. So let me ask you, when have times ever been certain? When did we ever know what was coming next? When did we ever know that this plan that I have is going to come to fruition? That this is the way this is all going to come together. This is how the puzzle fits together. But really, when were times ever certain? We just thought that times were certain. We just thought that the things we had planned were going to happen the way we had planned them. Why? Because a lot of times that's exactly what happened. A lot of times things that we had scheduled, it ended up that's exactly what happened. But think about this. Normalcy lulled us into a false sense of security. Normalcy lulled us in to a false sense of certainty. And that's true, isn't it? That normalcy, that things that sort of went the same way day after day after day, it lulled us in to a false sense of certainty. We just started assuming that yesterday, the way things went, this happened. I made plans for lunch yesterday, and then today I went to lunch. I made plans to do this, and then that thing happened. That normalcy, the things that went according to plan, it lulled us in to a false sense of certainty where we thought things the way they usually worked out in such and such a way, that things are sure or things are certain to work out the same way. But the truth is things were never certain. Things were never sure. Things were never guaranteed. And just because we made plans, it never meant that they were certainly going to come to pass. Moments like this, moments in our history, moments like this in our lives are sort of wake-up calls. And they are reminders that what has become abundantly clear last year, going into this year, abundantly obvious that we have always lived in uncertain times and we have never known what is coming next. We've never known what tomorrow would hold. We just simply thought we did. We simply thought we knew what tomorrow would hold. We simply thought we knew what next week or next month or next year would hold, but we never knew. It was always up to the Lord what came next. We just had that false sense of certainty. And as much as I like having a plan and knowing what direction I'm going, I hope that we never go back to having that false sense of certainty. I hope that we embrace, as part of our new normal, that's another phrase that we've learned to use, this idea that we don't know what tomorrow holds. How do you live your life if you don't know what tomorrow holds? What do you do with today when you don't know what tomorrow brings? Well, I'm glad you asked. That's the text that we're going to look at this morning. James chapter 4, beginning in verse 13. Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go into such and such town and spend a year there and trade and make profit. Yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little time and then it vanishes. Look, just look there at what James says. He says, you don't know what tomorrow brings. You don't know, and all of us living in this life that we are living now, right now, in the present, a year of COVID, we say, yeah, of course we don't know what tomorrow would bring. We don't know what the news is going to tell us next, tomorrow or next week or next month. I don't know what tomorrow will bring, but here's the thing. We know that now, but the thing is that just because it's obvious now, it doesn't mean it wasn't true last year when all of this started. Just because it's abundantly clear now to all of us that we don't know what tomorrow will bring, we never knew what tomorrow would bring. Just because we didn't realize it then doesn't mean that it wasn't true then. We just had this assurance about ourselves that we knew what tomorrow would bring. We just knew that the plans we had were going to come to fruition. James is talking here about that sort of attitude. The attitude that says, oh, yeah, I'm going to go do that tomorrow. I'm going to go do this and I'm going to do that. I'm going to go to this town and I'm going to spend a year there and I'm going to trade and I'm going to make profit. And James says, what makes you so sure? In fact, the question he asks is, what is your life? And the primary application for why we know the certainty of the future is unknown, that we don't know what tomorrow holds, is that our lives are so fragile. The fragility of our life is the reason we don't know what tomorrow holds. We don't know what next year holds. We think I'm going to go do this in this city and do this for a year, but your life, it's just a mist that appears for a short while, and then it's gone. Some translations say that your life is like the morning fog, and when the sunlight breaks and maybe a breeze blows through, the fog has vanished. Your life is so incredibly fragile. And because of the fragility of life, we have to embrace the uncertainty of the future. We've learned through all of this that life, my mortal life, your mortal life, it isn't the only thing that's fragile. Economies are fragile. We found out that supply chains are fragile. Toilet paper, anybody last year? Whole communities and cultures and societies and nations are fragile. They don't seem fragile. They seem like this giant clock with gears that will always be turning and will always be working the way they always have. But Babylon, I'm sure, felt like something solid. The Roman Empire, I'm sure, felt like they had something very concrete. The Greeks, no doubt, felt they had something that could not be moved. All of these empires of the past, they felt like something solid. And people would think, this is the way it's always going to be. Rome isn't going anywhere. Babylon won't go anywhere. Persia isn't going to be moved. And yet, in the grand scheme of things, these great and mighty empires were just a mist that appeared for a short time, and then they were gone. So James says, be careful about your planning. Be careful about your certainty. Be careful about your assurance that you know what tomorrow brings, because you don't. You don't. And this moment right now in your life and in our history is a gift to wake us up and remind us that while we are still living, that we don't know what tomorrow holds. Your life and everything in it, your culture and your society and your economy and all of your stuff and all of that is just a mist that appears for a little while and then it's gone. So we need to be careful about our certainties. May we never forget that we don't know what tomorrow holds. And then he says here in verse 15, instead of what? Well, instead of saying what he said before about going and doing this and that, instead you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live to do this or that. As it is, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. Do you see what he says there? He says, here's what people typically say. They say, I'm going to go do this tomorrow, and I'm going to go spend a year here, and I'm going to go do this for a while. And James says, stop talking like that and start talking this way. This way that says, if the Lord wills, it doesn't mean that you don't make plans. People who say, if the Lord wills, still make plans. They just make plans in humility. Look at what he says. He says, when you don't do this, when you say tomorrow, I'm going to go do this or that or the other, he says, as it is, you boast in your arrogance. And all such boasting is evil. Evil. James cuts right to the heart. Why is it evil? Evil? It's evil to say, I'm going to go do this or that, and I'm going to go do something tomorrow. I'm going to go do this other thing. Why? Why is that evil? Because it's arrogant and it's boasting. Well, how is it arrogant and boasting to say, I'm going to go do this or that? Because it's being presumptuous. We're presuming about something that we do not know. What is your life? Your life is just a mist that appears for a little while and then it's gone. He says, when you make plans without considering if it is the Lord's will, you are being arrogant. You're being boastful. It's wrong, and we need to stop talking that way. Why? Because we've said it 100 times. We don't know what tomorrow will bring. Make plans. Yes, make plans about tomorrow or next year and prepare to do this or that, but do it this way. If the Lord wills, we will live to do that. If the Lord wills, we will live, and if we live, we can do this thing or that thing, but we don't know about tomorrow or next year, and so it takes humility not to be presumptuous about the future, to not be presumptuous about tomorrow. It takes humility to surrender tomorrow to the Lord, and just spend a second thinking about that. It takes humility to surrender tomorrow to the Lord. We say, Father, tomorrow belongs to you. And we will not presume to know what tomorrow holds, but we will surrender it to you. We trust you with tomorrow, and if tomorrow comes, we may do this or that, but we will not presume to know what tomorrow will hold. And then look at what he says here in verse 17 finally. So whoever knows the right thing to do and fails to do it, for him it is a sin. Now, James is all about doing. This is an epistle of doing. James doesn't want you to just believe. He doesn't want you to just say that you love. He doesn't want you to just say that you have faith. He doesn't want you to just say that you have wisdom. He wants you to prove it. Do it. But not tomorrow, because you don't know what tomorrow holds. In our arrogance, so many times we say, tomorrow I'm going to do this, or tomorrow I'm going to do that. Next year, I'll go do this or that thing. And James says, you don't know about those things. You don't know if you're going to be alive to have a tomorrow, because your life is a mist that appears for a short while and then it's gone. You don't know what tomorrow will bring. And if you keep putting off the right thing to do, if you keep not doing the right thing because you keep saying, I'm going to do it tomorrow, then for you, it is a sin. To know the right thing to do and not do it. And in context here, I don't think he's just talking about sins of omission. That's typically what we say about this verse. That's a sin of omission. That means not doing the right thing you're supposed to do. But it's not here. It's not just someone who says, I'm not going to do that good thing. It's someone who says, I'm going to do that good thing, but I'm going to do it tomorrow. I'm going to do it later. I'm going to do it next year. James says for them, it's a sin because you know the right thing you ought to be doing, but instead of doing it, you are being presumptuous and you are assuming you will have a tomorrow in which you can do that right thing. James says, do the good thing. Do the good thing right now, because you don't know what tomorrow holds. So kind of as we wrap things up this morning, with this phrase, and think about it, try it out. Tomorrow belongs to the Lord. Tomorrow belongs to the Lord, so obedience belongs to today. tomorrow belongs to the Lord. I don't know what tomorrow holds. Who knows anything in this room about tomorrow? Who knows about next week? Who knows about next month? That belongs to the Lord. I'm going to surrender tomorrow to the Lord, so obedience belongs to today. I'm going to do the right thing today, as opposed to putting it off and procrastinating and saying, I'm going to do that tomorrow, presuming that I have a tomorrow, presuming I know what tomorrow holds. Tomorrow belongs to the Lord. So obedience belongs to today. One thing, that one thing that you know that you've been procrastinating about, do that one thing. Do that one right thing that you've known that you need to do for quite some time, that you should do. Maybe for some of you, it's to be baptized. You've known that you've needed to be baptized, and you know that you need to begin your walk of discipleship with Jesus, but for whatever reason, you said tomorrow, next week, I'll do that next month. Well, I hope that you realize by now that you don't know about tomorrow. All we know is the present. Do the right thing today. Obedience belongs to today, not till tomorrow. So maybe it's a phone call you need to make. Maybe it's someone that you need to be reconciled with. Maybe it's an apology you need to make, or one you need to accept. Maybe it's a card you need to write, or a good deed that you need to do. Maybe it's reading your Bible more, or opening up more in prayer. A sin that you need to confess, or working on your marriage in some way and apologizing for something that you said in anger and it's just been festering and growing. Today, take that next step today. Don't put it off until tomorrow. Don't say, I'll take care of that tomorrow, because you don't know what tomorrow will bring. Tomorrow belongs to the Lord, so obedience belongs to today. Maybe you've been baptized already and you found your walk getting harder. I encourage you, as Paul does, to live out your baptism every day. The Apostle Paul, he spent quite some time preaching about baptism in his epistles, but the letters weren't written to non-Christian people needing to be persuaded to be baptized. His letters in the New Testament were written to Christians, people who were already baptized. So why would Paul teach already baptized people about baptism? He's admonishing them to live out their baptisms or the implications of their baptism in their daily life. So what does that mean to live out our baptism? Well, as we close here, just a few thoughts. Number one is we try our best to look out and stay away from sin. Paul taught Christians that they were not under the law, but they were under grace. And because of this, some of his opponents would wrongly accuse Paul that he was teaching Christians that they should do more wrong so that more good could happen. But that's not what Paul was doing. Paul essentially said, no, they won't. Not if they continue to live out their baptism. When we are baptized, we're not only saying that we are forgiven of our sins, but we're also saying that we don't want to be slaves to sin anymore. We're saying we're done with living to please the flesh, and from now on we're going to do our best to please Jesus. We are killing and burying our old selves, our sinful selves, to be raised up to live a life of obedience to Jesus, not because of the law, but because of his grace. Any time, again, that we fall into temptation and sin, we need to remind ourselves of our baptism. We need to say to ourselves, why are you doing this? That life is dead. That life's been buried. You're not this person anymore. Hebrews 10 would teach us that if a person goes on continually sinning deliberately, he's not living as a baptized person. That person can expect to be judged by God because he's profaned the blood of the covenant by which he was sanctified and has outraged the spirit of grace. That's Hebrews 10:29. We are a forgiven people. So we need to live out our baptism, doing the best to abstain from a sinful life. Second thing real quick is love like family. The whole Bible is about the fact that God graciously chose to bless the descendants of Abraham and make them his special people. He established that first covenant with them, and then the death of Jesus fulfilled that covenant and established a second covenant. Paul argued under that new covenant, it was not possible to become a descendant of Abraham simply by being born into a physical family. Under the new covenant, you become a descendant of Abraham, a part of the chosen people of God, by having faith in Jesus Christ. Paul tells the church in Galatians 3 that when men and women and slaves and free people and Jews and Gentiles are baptized, they become Abraham's offspring. So anyone who is in Christ is our family. And when we love each other like family, we are living out our baptism. Being baptized is about passing from death into life. But when you have the love of a Christian family, you prove that you actually passed out of death into life. But when, on the other hand, you refuse to generously share the world's goods with your brother in need, you prove that you are still in death and the love of God does not abide in you. John tells us that in 1 John 3. And then finally, serve the church while living out your baptism. Paul taught that we are all baptized into one body. He compared the church to a body with various body parts and each member to do a specific job. Paul explained that all these parts, that they work together, using their unique gifts for the common good. When there is no division in the body, when all the members care for one another, then we are living out our baptism. But when each body part looks out for itself and shows no concern for the other parts of the body, then we're not living out those that have been baptized into one body. We're not living as baptized people. We're living as just the opposite. Living out your baptism means using whatever gifts God has given you to selflessly serve the rest of the body. If you've been buried with Christ in baptism, then live out your baptism today and every day. Live as someone who has been crucified with Christ. Live as someone who is dead to selflessness and selfless ambition and conceit. Live for the good of others and for the glory of God. And that's how we live out our baptism. So maybe this morning you've been baptized and find yourself not living that out. Or you're not baptized and you want to live out that mission. We encourage you to make that decision not tomorrow, but today, as together we stand and we sing.